This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have one of my favorite guests, Lisa Scottolini, New York Times bestselling author, and her new book is called Don't Go, and I think it's already reached number 5 on the New York Times, hasn't it? Hello?
It was number 2.
It went to number 2?
Yes.
I was looking back at the list, and
That's the second week. In the second week, it was number 5, but it started, debuted at number 2, which I was really happy about.
Number 2? That's so amazing. I mean, that's
Mary Higgins Clark was number 1, which we both understand, of course.
Right.
She is, you know, the queen. But I feel, you know, after 22 years, I feel like I'm finally making progress, and that's a good thing.
I think you have a crown on, too.
Oh, maybe a little tiara.
Maybe you're the king, you know? You could be the first female king. How's that?
I like it. I like the way you say, David.
How does it feel to be so big? I mean, 30 million copies sold. I mean, it's just staggering. Your success is just blows me away.
Oh, well, you're so sweet. I mean, you know that I really do think it's just like, the time is a big factor. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've written a lot of books in that time. It's not like I do a book every 4 years, which I do. I've done 22 books, something like that. I mean, it's more than a book a year at this point, and I feel lucky. I just feel lucky to have this job. And you know, for me, I mean, it's always really just amazing and great to me. I feel grateful every day. I feel grateful for a lot of things in my life.
But you have a lot of talent, though. I mean, that it's not your success is because you're very talented at what you do. I mean,
you're very sweet to say that, but you have to really work hard. You have to work hard over time. Like, maybe some people's careers, and I see this, you know, there are authors who, they hit it right out of the block, and they got lots of, you know, readers, but that hasn't been my path. My path is, you know, earn it. Earn it, earn it, earn it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I feel really happy about that. Because, like, when you get there, you're like, wow, it feels very rock solid.
Yeah. I mean, and this book, Don't Go, the new one, is told from on the male point of view, which I've been waiting for you to do for so long, since I am a male.
Love you. I didn't know that. Well, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, continue.
No, well, you know what? I've been waiting for me to do it, too, because I secretly wanted to, but I was secretly afraid to, because I think I've been writing stories about women for so long, not that the books are only for women, but they're definitely stories about women, and that was part of my goal and why I started writing about it. I felt like, you know, 20-odd years ago, there just weren't enough really strong, funny, smart women in the leads in books, especially in crime fiction. We were always second banana, and honestly, I was really sick of it. And I still think it's not enough. But I thought, you know, you don't want to be in a position as a writer where you're doing, you have to stretch yourself. Like, that sounds corny, but it's really true. You have to try different things.
Right.
And it energizes,
absolutely.
As an author, it energizes you, and it scares you. And I hope that freshness that is created because of both those things, you know, sort of seep into the novel in some secret way.
Now, you know, I've known you for a long time, but I mean, this is one of my 3 favorites of yours now. I mean, books.
Aww.
And I'm not just saying that because I love you, but I really enjoyed this book. I stood up. I was laying in bed one night, just reading the whole thing. All night I was reading the whole thing. And there's a point in the book, I think it's chapter 35, where I woke up in the morning and I was like, oh my God, what just happened? And I didn't realize what had happened until I read on into the chapter. It just scared me. It's the first time I've been scared by your books. But it was so different from what I felt reading your books that I thought, wow, this is cool. I like this. I like this feeling of something that I haven't experienced before.
Well, good. That really makes me so happy because that's the whole goal. I mean, you know, sort of divided now into doing, in terms of novels, you know, these sort of more emotional standalones, as they call them, which is not a series. And And also doing Rosado now too, which is a series with an all woman's law firm, and to kind of like I want a surprise in both. Like you can't. I sound like a teenager with the leg stuff, but I mean, you can't. I honestly feel like you can't let down, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it's sort of in a. If you're a little, I think I've had the feeling when I read people sometimes that sort of this gets phoned in. This is phoned in. Whether the author's working too hard or they're traveling in the same terrain, and you kind of, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. Somebody pays for each book. When they buy your 15th book, you can't ride on the laurels of your 12th. It just doesn't work that way.
You have a very, very special relationship with your readers. I mean, you're very appreciative of your readers, and that, I mean, that, to me, that's one of the reasons you're so successful too, because you appreciate what you have. You're not just going out there saying, "Well, just buy my book because you bought the ones before." You really try hard to make everyone special.
Well, you're a sweetheart, and I'm sure there's authors that feel that way too. It's just that a little bit. I'm very much a people person. Like some people tend to be more. I'm a completely extroverted person. I mean, you say, you know, we should say, like, we know each other. We're friends. We became friends because we met because we both love books.
Right.
Right. I mean, and it's, how long have we known each other now? 15 years? I mean,
it's more than that, I think.
I think it is too. I mean, it's 20 maybe.
But you know what? But you know what? Right. I can still remember one hug you gave me at Bryn Mawr, Barnes & Noble in Bryn Mawr about 15, I had to be 10 to 15 years ago. I still remember that hug. I still remember how I felt after it. And
Aww. That's
how you make people feel. That's why people love you so much. Not to mention you're a great writer.
Well, you are too kind. And we should say that, you know, like, I don't want them to think we're like romantically involved. Although, no, but I'm kind of a huggy person. And the truth is, it's really nice because I think, well, you hug me back. People who come to my signings, I think, you know, when you read someone's novel, you really, like, are in their head a little bit and really in their heart. And if you like it, you know, you're probably going to like them. And that's how I feel about the readers. I'm like, well, if you really like my book, I know I'm going to like you because I'm on the page and I know if you came to it and you liked it, you're with me. And so to me, the hug is just sort of a, I don't know, I'm Italian, I can't help it. But I love the connection. I love the connection. That's right. Why I write. That's I just got back from tour. Right. You know, it's very motivating to sort of, it's just a lot of love and approval. What's not to like?
Absolutely.
But
you look at everybody in the world, and there are people that don't like that, people that will not hug, the people that are, you know, are afraid to hug, and you're not afraid of anything. Apparently you're not afraid of anything.
I'm kind of not.
You're fearless.
Well, as you get older, and I find that the more you trust people, the more they open their heart to you. I mean, it's kind of really amazing, and I think it's not an accident that it's about books. I mean, you know, people at the gym, you don't feel that way about. A gym doesn't build that kind of openness and communication. Only books do that. Right. Only books do that.
Right. Yeah, and I read your article that's in the Mystery Scene magazine. It's just out, I think, now, about Robert Parker. And it makes me, I mean, everything I read by you makes me think, and that's what I like. I love to think all the time. I love to be, you know, where's she going with this? And I don't necessarily always like the characters. There are times when I see, what an idiot you are to do that, you know?
Right.
I mean, do you create characters so we like every one of them?
No. In fact, I think the main character in this book, he's a little bit of his own worst enemy, and I don't want to, like, give away spoilers, but he really, he's very flawed. But the other thing about that I feel for him is he's a flawed guy, but he's in a really impossible circumstance. Like, I really wanted to look at war and the effect of war and the aftermath of war and how that tests people. And in a personal way, that affects their family, not in a way that's kind of like, I mean, he's tested on in the battle, but he's also tested when he gets on the home front.
Right.
And I think that's, from my research, pretty typical. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to send a message or anything, because you're always trying to tell a really good story. But really, I sort of wrote about that because the war is happening now, and has been happening for so long. And also, it was like the end of the war, which I think is a little bit different from the beginning. And how does it feel to be I sort of thought, gee, how does it feel to be like the last person to die in a war? What is that going on there? And try to throw a spotlight on really the people who serve and their families. I mean, I think we do support them and we say we support them, but you know they're not really very much in evidence. I mean, there's not a lot of. I don't find a lot of fiction about it. I find nonfiction about it, and that's wonderful. And I actually read almost all of it, if not all of it, and used it for research, in addition to finding an Army vet who had served in Afghanistan, so that was important, too.
Yeah, the research, I mean, is meticulous. I mean, I'm reading a book, and I'm thinking, I think Lisa is a doctor.
You are so nice. And you know what's incredible? I just got, there's an opening quote in the book, which is, every war has a signature wound. And the quote, I got that quote from Dr. Ronald Glasser, who wrote the textbook that I used. I mean, we should tell what we're talking about, because I'll just give you the headline, which is, what the book's about is a podiatrist, actually, an Army orthopedic surgeon serving in Afghanistan. And while he's gone, his wife is killed in what kind of looks like a household accident. And so when he returns home, he's got to figure out kind of what happened to her and raise his daughter and sort of think about what it means to be a father. I mean, there's a lot of themes in this book. But in any event, I really had to understand surgery because there's a surgery scene in this book.
Right.
And it's from the, right? So anyway, long story short, I get all these books. One book in particular is super helpful. It's about combat surgery during Afghanistan and Iraq. It's written by Dr. Ronald Glasser. And I used his quotes from the beginning of the book and credited to him. And I got an email from him today.
Hmm.
And it was really amazing. And I just wrote him back. And I'm going to give him a book and everything. But
there's research and then there's research. I mean, sometimes when you see research in a book, you're like, oh, well, you can tell they got that from somewhere else. But I couldn't tell at all. I just really believed you know all about this. I don't know how you made it.
That's very nice of you.
I mean, and let's face it, you're not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor.
But one would swear you are by reading this book, you know?
Here, I'll read it to you. This is so nice. Dear Lisa, today at the hospital, one of the ward clerks came running up to me, and she said, she quoted you in her new book. I asked who she was, and the nurse said, Lisa Scottolini, that famous author. How cute is that? I've read all her books. and he said, I know I have been read and taken seriously by the military and those involved with health care. But it's real. Now I know what it's like to be famous. I mean, it's a super nice thing to say.
What is it like? What is it like for you to be famous?
I'm not famous.
You don't ever go into the mall and think I'm a famous person. I'm going to get recognized.
I'm not a famous person. I mean, people who read books might know my name, but even among them, you know, the funny thing about books, and I kind of love it that there's so many. It's such a matter of taste. You know, like I think there's books that. Like a romance reader isn't going to necessarily, you know, people who read romances or people who read science fiction or people who, there's tons of people who only read biographies or mostly nonfiction, you know, and so it's my business to sort of know who's writing in lots of categories, but it isn't a normal person, a civilian, if you will, you know, he doesn't know that stuff. So, but I don't really care. You don't become a writer for fame. You become a writer because you really want to tell stories, and in my case, connect with people about that. Connect with them.
What is so amazing is reading your books, and I mean, I think to myself, boy, all these pages, and how does she do it? How does she make it flow so nice and smooth? I mean, it's not easy to do. I mean, you sit down and try to write yourself sometime if you're not talented like you are, and you know it's not easy to tell the story and to be detailed oriented with everything in the book, and everything's got to make perfect sense.
It really does, particularly in a particularly with a story where there's a murder or a crime at. I think the thing is really useful for people to know, and I know you have such a, I was looking at your page earlier. I mean, it's such an amazing resource for people, and I think that what they should know is when they see the finished product, it didn't look like that before. Like, there should be a before and an after, you know? Because there's some people, I read other people, I go, God, this is, like, amazing. And then you go to yourself, well, you can do this because, you know, this is the 55th draft. The first was crap. And it's really, and this book in particular, Don't Go, because I actually, this book finished is about 120,000 words. When I was finished the first draft, it was 185.
Wow.
Which is twice as big. I have, because of all the research, and I had a lot more war scenes in it, I mean, it was more. There was just more. And when I looked at it again, I thought, you know what, this could lose a lot of weight. And I have a really good editor, and she looked at it again, and she was like, you know, you could cut this part out. And it was, and I was nervous, because, you know, you do all that work. You're like, yeah. You don't want to lose any. To me, I'm still a fourth grader who wants credit. I want credit. Look, you know, show your work. I'm like a show your work person. But you know, I thought about it, because I looked at it with a fresh eye. You know, you step away, and you go, you know what, if you cut something out, it improves the whole in a way that you don't really understand. You hate to lose anything, but when you lose something, you gain so much more, and that's what I always say to myself. And I did. I mean, I basically cut a third of this book out. So, you know, it's really nice that it reads smooth now, but it took so many drafts. I mean, more and more I find that I enjoy it so much. I love writing. But I felt like, I think to a certain extent I'm getting a little better at it, but not really. Mm. Not really.
I think it got better with this one. I definitely. This one. I really felt like, wow, she's really improving with this book. Really improving.
Well, that's lovely of you to say, because for me, I'm really trying to improve.
I'm very, very picky about books. When I don't like a book, I won't even finish it. I mean, and I don't like to do that. But there's sometimes books just bore me, and I have to close them. You know, we've all felt that way.
I think that's a good practice. I think that's good practice because a lot of people don't, and I feel like, you know, there's so many good books in the world, and if you spend your time reading one that you don't like, you know, you're going to miss the good ones. It's not really, you don't have to be so dutiful. Most people, I think it's really good that you do that, because I think most people don't do that.
And a lot of the fun of the reading is realizing, wow, this person really knows how to tell a story. I mean, telling a story is so paramount in enjoying a book. And there has to be a good story. You have to feel that hook, that I need to know what's going to happen next. And we read your first chapter, Don't Go, and it's a woman who is dying. And we have to know what happened to this woman. What is going on? What is, and that's such a great way to start. I mean, you can actually see it in your head. You see the woman laying on the floor of her home.
That was like a hard scene to write because, you know, the woman is, she's basically bleeding to death. So I sort of had to get some, you know, I want the medical stuff to be true. But, of course, she's not a doctor, so she's not going to describe it in doctor terms. But, you know, you sort of, so I talked to this doctor about what it's like to bleed to death, and it's really sad. You know, it's just sad and grim.
It is.
And
did you feel sad when you were writing it?
I did. I feel sad thinking about it now. I think, you know, it was a reviewer who said something like these standalone books. I sort of loved this because that was so interesting. They said my standalone books are like a family story with a crime, and the series, the Rosato series, is like a crime story with a family.
Oh, like, interesting.
Isn't that true? You know what? And that's kind of true, isn't it? That's true.
Yeah. There's no doubt. Absolutely. There's a woman online I was just reading who said, this new one, Don't Go, is like two books in one, too. There's one story in Afghanistan, there's one story at home. And that's true, too. I never thought of it as two books.
And I kind of wanted that, because I wanted to show, you know, that always where they say you should show and not tell. I wanted people to see what he went through there. And then see what he has to come home to. And the fact is, I don't want to give anything away, but the legal situation that he encounters at home is very common for returning vets. Mm. It is actually a real problem that returning vets are having. And I was like, you know, you can explore that. You should throw a spotlight on that too, because I think people who read me, I think people who read in general are, you know, they like to be, I don't want to say educated, but that is kind of what I mean. Like, I like to learn something from books. Like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, that's an interesting thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. That makes it even more fun. Well, a lot of people will say, well, I don't like to read fiction because it's not true. There's lots of truth in it. There's lots of, you've done your homework, and there's things that are true in the book in real life.
Yeah. I think, and you also discover emotion. I mean, I write nonfiction, too, so I get it. But honestly, you discover emotional truth. I mean, I started to think more and more, you know, between writing the memoirs, which are kind of just about my life and with my daughter, that I think that the line about, I agree with you is what I'm trying to say in a long way, that what it doesn't really matter if it's so true or not. There's a lot of truth in it, and it's really, did you enjoy it? Did you connect with it? Did it show you best of all.
I think
it shows you something about your own life.
Right, and I think the test of a good writer is, did you lose yourself in the book so much you forgot it was fiction? And I've done that with your books, and done that with a lot of good authors. And that's what happened. You get so caught up in the story, you think, well, this is real. This feels so real.
Yeah, and when someone says they can't put it down, that's why. Because and that's how I feel about people I read. I remember missing a train stop, and it was in the snow, too, which was bad. And that was, actually, that was when I was a lawyer. You know, I was just a reader before I was a writer, and I was took the train home at night and just got lost in this book and totally missed my stop. And I was like, wow, that was good.
Do you start each book, when you write each book, do you thinking, I want this book to be better than the one before it?
I hope that's true, but I don't start it with that. I start it with, this book has to be really, really the best book I can write right now. And it has to be a little bit different. It's a weird thing. I think, this is what I actually think, which is kind of embarrassing, but we tell the truth. You know that commercial where they go, it's the same thing, only different?
Yeah.
I don't know what that's from, but I think that a little. What, do you know what it's from?
No, I don't.
It's not really what I want to say, but it's close. It's kind of like you still want to write in a voice that people will accept from you. Like, this is a male character. He doesn't sound like Benny Rosato. He's a little of Mary D'Annunzio, and then he's a little insecure, but he's his own self. But I have I have an authorial voice. Right. Most people do. Anybody does, really. I mean, your kid does. Anybody does.
Well, when you started writing Mike, did you know where he was going, or did he surprise you sometimes?
No, he totally surprised me. In fact, towards the end, when he starts to make very bad decisions, I was like, you know what? This is what he would do, and this is a real mess. Like, not to be mean, because I don't mean to judge him, but you know what? Honestly, if you lived, I'm 57. I'd actually just got back from my 40th high school reunion.
Wow.
Imagine that. I know, and it was really wonderful and great. But what I noticed about it was that we have all lived. The lucky ones are there. Some are not. And we've learned things, and there's divorced people. I'm divorced twice. There's people who have, one guy was telling me how he lost all the money in the stock market. People make mistakes. And that's very human, and that's what this guy does in Don't Go. He makes a lot of mistakes, and partly because it occurs in a short period of time. I'm sure there's people, God, I don't want to get too personal with you, but I know in grief, that's what I really wanted to look at, too.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost your mom. I lost my dad.
And it all affects us differently.
It all affects us differently. But I think there are times in your life, especially in that situation, like where he is, well, you're a little out of your gourd. You're a little out of your mind. You're not really, you know, centered and making the best decisions you would normally make. It's uncharacteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually is behaving uncharacteristically, and that's when we take a snapshot of him.
There are times I feel like kicking him in the seat of the pants, too.
Yes, I mean, I think of anyone I've written. Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I was like, I'm going to say this without having tested it in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But of anyone I've written, I think there are times with him that I was like, dude, like, oh no, oh why? But that was a really interesting process as a writer, because you're kind of like, my theory has always been, you just have to, because I'm making it up as I go along, and the way I do that is to try to figure out what this character would do, which actually, oddly and paradoxically, defined him as we go along. You know, he's the kind of guy that might do X, or, you know, over-medicate, or, you know, all the things he does. And so what I've always hoped is that the reader will understand his actions. And I think I'm saying this out loud, I don't know if it's true, but that you start to worry about him. Like, he's a threat to himself, and he's messing up his life. And that's a feeling that I have for my friends when they've lost their way sometimes. Certainly have a wonderful daughter. But I think if you have a kid in the world, you're always like, oh my God, be careful. You know, don't go in the parking lot. Don't get mixed up with the wrong people.
Right.
Don't try drugs. Don't get hooked. you know, all the dangers and temptations that are in the world. If you love someone, your heart is in your throat as they navigate the world. Mm-hmm. And that's how I sort of felt with him. And you're right, he did go in directions that I hadn't anticipated. I mean, I just didn't see it coming. But I was like, well, you can't not go there.
But at the same time, as we're reading the book, I got to find out what happens to this guy. I mean, to lose your wife and not even be there when you lose her is a horrifying heart. I mean, it's the biggest nightmare we can ever imagine.
Yeah, and I think even that, you know, the part which is sort of sad with him, you know, going back and the kid doesn't know him, and which I think is also very common. And, you know, he just, I don't know, I just felt for him. I got why he made the mistakes he did. And that's why sort of I don't always do epilogues, and I don't want to say anything about the end, but I was like, I want to see what happens with this guy, and I want to show the reader what happens with this guy, because we're all worried about him. Like, we're worried.
When you sit, I mean, do you always write at home? Is that the only place you write?
Yes.
So you won't write on a plane or write in a hotel or anything?
No.
That's interesting.
No.
I'm wondering, are you always enjoying yourself when you sit and write?
No, I'm never enjoying myself when I sit and write.
Really?
Unless, with some of the risotto, well, I'll tell you, in this scene, in this book, I think a lot of the byplay between him and his friend Shaddy was fun to write. And when I, because they're both smart, clever people, and when I was, for example, talked to my Army surgeon research guy, mm-hmm. you know, he, obviously, he had great deal of, I mean, he'd been in Afghanistan. He was 2 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Iraq. He has a dark humor about it. And it reminded me very much of when I hang out with homicide detectives for any kind of, I mean, I do that a lot because they help me with any, I mean, I'm always writing about murder to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And so I have a couple of guys who are my go-to guys, and I hang with them, and I thought this gallows humor that they have, which he has in Don't Go, and he and his friend have, is just like homicide detectives, and they have a coping mechanism. And you can't take the horror of this without just occasionally, you know, laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the homicide division in Philadelphia has a sweatshirt they gave me, and it says, they said, you can't wear this in public. I said, I won't. And it says, our day begins when yours ends. And
wow.
You know,
that's
right?
Pretty powerful.
It's pretty powerful, and it's, you know, it's kind of dark, isn't it? You're like, ugh.
Definitely.
Now you know these guys, you have to know that these guys are profoundly, that they joke about it doesn't mean that they're not affected by the murders that they try to solve. In fact, they're profoundly affected by it. They get haunted. I have 2 main sources, and they both tell me that they dream about their cases, that there's cases that they, if they haven't cleared it or solved it, they still carry it around. They never forget. They never forget the families. I mean, look, it's really a tough line of work. And that's true as well of war, especially war, because, well, I don't think you can even train human beings over time to look at all the stress they come back with in post-traumatic stress. And you can't blame them.
No. Well, I had there was one time at work, this is years ago, we had a guy come in, and he was showing us pictures of murders. I mean, he had like a book of really graphic pictures of things that had happened to victims. And it was the most horrifying thing. I still remember to this day how horrifying it was. And then right after that, he wanted to buy us lunch, and he was going to bring in roast beef, and I couldn't eat. My stomach.
I believe it, yeah.
My stomach was like, and now you're going to serve roast beef? It was too much. It was just too much. I couldn't even bear it.
Well, the research for this book, I had to use all these medical textbooks about orthopedic, because like this Ronald Glass, Dr. Glasser, is somebody who, he's an orthopedic battlefield combat surgeon. I could not look at a lot of the pictures. I mean, I could never be a doctor. It was killing me. I was like, I got to get out of this scene. This scene's killing me. And I actually thought it wasn't too graphic, although I got 1 or 2 emails that said, that was really graphic. I was like, honey, you have no idea what I cut out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
exactly.
You're right. I mean, human beings aren't really, especially big softies like you and me. You know, like, we're not built for this. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
We're like puppies in books.
Yeah, blood does not, I can't take blood either. If somebody started bleeding in front of me, it would upset me greatly, very greatly.
Yeah, totally. Well, look, it's horrible to say, but look at Boston. I mean, that's just grim footage. And with the marathon, and that reminds, I mean, I thought of the book, because I was like, this is exactly what it is. It's an IED. It's an improvised explosive device, and it's situated low, and it just takes, it just, that's why I really wanted to sort of explore this character. You know, I kind of got the idea, weirdly enough, when I had bunion surgery. And I met right?
It just sounds so funny. It isn't meant to be funny.
No, but it is funny, because it's like you think it's going to be some lofty thing, and it's really, no, I got like a, you know, my bunion removed.
We know, and, I mean, we know a lot about you, Lisa, just from your column.
Yeah, way too much. But I met the podiatrist, and he sort of said it's not that prestigious specialty, but he's the one who sort of put me onto the fact that in the Army, right now, podiatrists are really, you know, so much sought after, and, you know, the Army's waiving the fitness requirements and a lot of the age requirements because they're, and also pressuring these guys to stay in.
Wow.
Because of these IEDs. And I thought, oh, that is a fascinating, it's fascinating and tragic and true, and that's going to be the next book. And it is, it's Don't Go.
And you're like a big sponge. You soak up all this information and this curiosity. I mean, writers have curiosity beyond anything. I mean, they have more curiosity than the average person, I think.
Well, I don't know. I think that's a true thing. I think it is true that I have it, but I think a lot of people, I think most people have it. I think people who, like, especially people who read, because I think anytime you pick up a book, you're just sort of going, I'm going to explore this world this person's going to take me into. The world is their mind. It isn't like, you know, across the ocean. I don't mean like in a literal sense. I mean, what is it? That's why I think in a way reading is so broadening. You know, like it's very hard to be a prejudiced, closed-minded person if you read widely. Because you're always, I always think of it as a little empathy lesson. You're always putting yourself in someone else's shoes and going, would I do that? Or, why are they doing that? Or I get why they did that, and I'm almost having the same experience. And so you become a very broad-minded person, I think. Mm. You can always tell people who read a lot and people who don't. You know, it's an aspect of intelligence, but it's really a much more broad-mindedness.
Mm.
It's the opposite of ignorance.
And one of your fans online said they didn't want this book to end. She said, I was so sad when it ended. Isn't that an amazing comment about your work?
That's lovely. I mean, the comments are, you know, I have a Facebook page, and I'm all the posts are by me, and so I try not to go on it a lot because you're supposed to be writing, so you can sit there and read how great you are.
Oh, you don't always have to write.
Yeah, you know, but I do like to reply because they took the time to post. So I will go and say that. But that's only, it's just sort of a nice thing. I just think it's, when someone says they just got the book and read it or couldn't put it down or something like that, I just write to them, you know, that's music to my ears. It really is. It's powerful. I mean, after we hang up, I've got to write a column, and I felt a little energized by some of the stuff on my Facebook.
Well, how do you stay so energized? There's got to be...
It's like anybody with, you know, you do your job, and hopefully...
Well, I mean, you have great work ethic. I mean, and because you're always doing something. You never seem... I've never heard you say, well, I can't do that. I can't do this. You always do it, and you do it with such a happy countenance a lot of times. Now, I'm sure
that's so sweet. Well, I feel lucky. I do feel lucky and happy. I kind of love what I do. I think I say no... The things I say no to, I do, you know, like, I don't have a wild social life, I gotta tell you. I mean, that I went to this reunion was a big deal, and it's every 40 years. It's the first one I've gone to.
Now, did anybody tell me the truth? Did anybody say they had read your books?
Yeah, a lot of people did, which was really nice.
Oh, that's sweet. That's really cool.
Yeah, that really was. And, well, you know, I love personal history, and I love, like, look at us, 20 years. It happens, it's trite, yeah. It sounds trite, but it happens in the blink of an eye. And
I mean, I'm a better person because I know you. I really believe
Aww,
that.
Aw, David, that's a lovely thing to say.
I really feel that way. And it's not just because you're my friend. It's because I feel better when I see you. I feel better knowing that I know you and that when I see you, I'm going to be happier. I mean, that's a great feeling.
Aw, well, I feel that way about you, and I felt that way about you in a way when I first met you because you were so enthusiastic about the books. And I was like, I'm enthusiastic about you.
And I still remember your father at the King of Prussia Mall. I mean, geez.
Oh, I know, my poor dad.
I mean, just that whole day standing outside the King of the Jeans books and selling your books, that was so much fun for me.
But you're so sweet because if you go back, I mean, you remember back then, it's not like there was a big line. I didn't even have a real signing. Remember, I was basically standing there with a card table.
But I had more fun that day. I'm telling you, that was so much fun.
It was you and me and my father.
That's a moment that'll live for the rest of our lives.
That's exactly right.
And we'll remember when we're in heaven too.
He thought you were so you read everything. And he came to reading very late in his life, only at, like, retirement. And then he read everything. And I remember it was like, you guys were just exchanging all these, he was talking about books, and it was like, it was great.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. Although, funny, you have to point out that basically, did I sell any books? No.
I sold some books. I remember selling books.
You did. But David, no, I mean, early in my career, nobody was, they weren't beating down the door is what I'm trying to say.
Right. But look what you've gotten to. Look
at
it now.
Right,
I mean, just
that's nice of
number
me,
two on the New York Times?
I know. I feel guilty that I corrected you. But
Is there times you have to pinch yourself and say, is this really happening?
Every day. Yeah. And you say, what energizes me that? I'm like, wow, you lucked out, kid. You better, get your butt upstairs and start working.
Sorry, but see, that's the thing. You have such a great work ethic too. I'm in awe of your work ethic. I mean, you never tire.
So many people do. This is a country. Well, I think it's not just American, but people work hard. I think people are working so much harder than they are. Take a look, for example, at the newspaper. Right, I'm writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Right.
Now, I don't go in. I don't need to, but I did. There were times when I did, and I've seen that newsroom over time, become empty. From a bustling newspaper, major metropolitan newspaper, to fairly not, and move buildings and go through a bankruptcy. And I guess you realize, how lucky you are, and also that times change and they affect industries greatly. We lost a Borders Books. Who would ever thought that Borders would go out of business?
That's very sad.
It's very sad, and we lose indies. I mean, Westchester Books and Music, which we both love,
right,
is about to reopen, we hope.
Yes.
But, so anyway, my point is, I take nothing. I was raised by Depression-era people, and they never had any money. And I have that fear that you can lose it. So I live very conservatively, and I work hard. And I think a lot of people do it. What I started to say about the newspaper is that, the newspaper still has to operate on less staff. And my editor at the newspaper is doing like three more jobs than she used to 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's
doing more work. And getting
everybody's doing more. Everybody's doing more to stay in place. Everybody's doing more with less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult times. I think these are difficult times.
I mean, I've got friends that work so many hours a week, I don't even get a chance to see them. And that's sad, but I understand that they need to make money, And that's the world we live in today, where work has to come before, going out with friends sometimes. And it's hard,
totally.
But it's the truth.
And it's the truth. I mean, I hope people understand, but I've just started to say, I'm not going to even say I can have lunch with you, because I could never have lunch with you. I'm just telling you I can't do that. Especially as a writer. It sounds horrible, but as a writer, you can't just pick up at 11 o'clock, go somewhere. First, you have to look nice. I never look nice.
You mean we can never have lunch?
I get my lunch by myself. I'm working. I can't be swanning around and get back with a full tummy and makeup on. Who needs that? I mean, I can't do that.
Would you ever say that writing is a glamorous life? I mean, is there any question?
Yeah, well, I think being an author, I mean, look, I think it's kind of great that, like, book tour is what I'm thinking about. When you tour, it's glamorous. Not that it, look, that there's a car to pick you up at the airport is kind of nice. I mean, not a limo, but, you know, when you're on tour.
We can arrange that, you know.
I know. But I mean, there's not a lot you have to do for yourself on tour. Now, I happen to love being home, so I can't say I love being away. But what I'm saying is, like, sometimes I go, wow. I get off the plane. There's a car. The guy has your name on a card. They take you to the hotel where nowadays I used to do more stock signings, but there's fewer bookstores. So now I just kind of get ready for the nighttime. I watch a movie. This is boring. Yes. But I mean, and then I go out and I work at night. I don't have to write anything those days. Those are, like, I'm not producing. When I'm producing something, that's a hard day.
But you always, everywhere you go, you do these book tours, everybody loves you there. I mean, people just love you to death. I mean, you have a lot of fans.
That's nice. I mean, I think
Isn't it true?
Well, I think it is. Well, you have to look at it this way. The people who don't like you don't come to your signing. It's very simple.
Unless they're just so curious, they have to know what you're like.
Well, no. Maybe. Then they really have no life. And the other thing I figured out is also that the people who, let's say there's a lot of people who read you, but there's going to be a tiny, tiny part of that that will actually come to a signing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means that the people who come to the signings love you to death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you love them to death because you know they have 4 million different things to do, and they've got to show up somewhere at 7 o'clock and drive there and... Oftentimes, you know, these things are in the city, so they're either stayed in the city and, you know, someone else took care of their kids, or they drove back into the city like some people in Houston, or they drove long distances. And they sit there and they clap at you. That's glamorous. Honestly, it's kind of glamorous. It's kind of, that's the part that I think is glamorous.
Well, you have to at some point feel important.
Oh, I never...
You don't feel that way?
No.
I feel you're important to me. And
well, you're important to me, but we don't need a limo to tell us that.
No, that's true. But
no, I don't.
I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out I want to see what a writer's life is like, and you're a good example because you've come from three people coming to your signings and now 300, 400, 500 people show up sometimes.
Well, I think I don't. I guess when I've done a speech, I've had that many. But the thing is, a writer's life is very different depending on whether it's tour or not tour. And I'm lucky that I get a tour. Not everybody gets a tour. I've worked into this tour. So, but mostly what a writer's life is sitting down in front of a computer for 10 hours a day, at least. That's really what it is. I write when I'm in first draft, I write 2,000 words a day. The column that I'm going to write tonight is 800 words. That will take me a long time, probably till the middle of the night to do.
You'll miss Mad Men.
I will miss Mad Men, but they rerun it all the time.
That's right.
You'll have to tell me what happens.
That's right.
If Breaking Bad starts up, I'm going to be really in trouble. But in any event, a writer's life is solitary and just like everybody else's life who works at home. It really isn't any different. It's only tour that it's kind of like, ooh, I need eye makeup. It's fun.
But it's so interesting the way you describe it. I mean, but writing is fun. Like you said before, writing can be fun too. There can be a lot of fun things about creating characters. I mean, do you know what's going to happen to Benny Rosato next? And I don't.
Well, the funny thing is, I don't know what's going to happen to Benny Rosato next. I just kind of figure it out as I go. I never have an outline. But you're right. That is the fun of it. Like you go, and the characters. I mean, it sounds really nutty, but honestly, I know they're made up, but they do take on a life.
I mean, do you ever wake up in the morning and they're telling you what to write about them?
Well, they're telling. I often wake up in the morning and go, that's what she would do next. Sometimes I get something, what would she do? Whether it's Rosato or anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this book, like, what's he going to do? And a lot of times, sometimes you just need sleep. And sometimes you just need to, like, look away. I always call it look. In my head, I go, look away. Like, you're staring at it. You can't force things. And sometimes you just need to, like, walk the dog. Here's my go-to thing. Take a shower. Take a shower is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Walk the dog or just go to bed already. Because in the morning, I love the morning because I think, like I say to my daughter, anything that's bad at night, a lot of things are bad at night. I don't know what it is, but maybe because you're tired.
Yeah.
The tendency, like, oh, that's bad, that sucks. And if you wake up in the middle of the night, then everything's really sucking. Like, you're like,
Right.
At least for in my life, I don't know if you feel that way, but where it really does, there's a great Shakespeare quote about sleep that, I think he says, knits up the raveled sleeve of care.
Mm.
And that's like such a, right? It's not a great, because it's true. You feel kind of like you're unraveled at night. You're kind of, And then in the morning, you're kind of knitted together again. And it doesn't look so bad. Or you realize how lucky you are to be alive. Or all of the whole things that come with morning. That's really great.
Mm-hmm.
And I write the sad scenes at night. If I have a sad scene to write, I actually save it. I just go, you know what, you're going to go do something else right now, but you're going to have to start at 9 o'clock. And when you're really tired...
Giving yourself
really
orders, huh?
Exactly. Oh, totally. Please tell me you talk to yourself. I mean...
Oh, of course. Are you kidding me? People hear me talk to myself sometimes.
I know. Sometimes I'll start... Because, you know, I live alone, and so I have these dogs, and... All of a sudden, I'll talk to myself, and you know it because all the dogs look up. And they're like, oh.
Who are you talking to?
Wait. It was quiet for like 5 hours. And then she said, Scottolini, get upstairs. And
as a writer, you can very, the phone rings, you're distracted instantly. And you have to, it's difficult for you. I mean, you have.
No, I put it aside.
Oh, you
I
do?
Don't.
You don't answer the phone?
Yeah. No, I don't answer the phone. Because I imagine, like, if I, in the olden days when I was a lawyer, I had a secretary, and if I said to her, I need to write a brief, you know, that madman, hold my calls,
yeah.
I would say, hold my calls. And so there was a little watchdog that took care of me. And now I go, you know what, Lisa? Because I say to my daughter who's writing, oh, you need to put your phone in another room. Because all the people text you, or they call you, and... You can't, even the looking away, just the looking away and having somebody go, oh, it's a text, oh, I need to answer it. I could go into a whole big lecture about the distractibility of the internet and all that stuff. I think it's lethal. It's lethal to writers. And so I just go, listen, you're not going to, there's nothing that can't wait. If it were my mom, you know, that's the only thing that can't wait. But, you know, I usually call her.
I'm constantly amazed at the way you give everything of yourself. And what I mean by that is people know your life. They read your columns. They know what goes on in your life. They know every intimate detail sometimes. And I think...
I know. It's so funny because, you know, I write these columns and they're enclosed in books like, collected in books, rather, like Why My Third Husband Will Be a Dog. It's a whole series that I write with my daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the funny thing is when I go to my reunion last night, everybody's like, we know everything that's going on with you because we read the memoir.
Oh, yes, exactly.
And that's really weird. Like, yeah, how was your surgery? How's the dogs? How's the puppies? You know, it really is a funny thing. I mean, I had to hear about everybody else, which was great. I was like, all right, how many kids? They're like, your daughter's gorgeous.
But you're good. Your daughter is beautiful inside and out. That's what makes her so beautiful.
Thank you. That's actually how I feel. I think she is inside a beautiful
person. I mean, you meet her and you just feel this warmth inside of her. This I really care about you kind of, the way she talks to you is amazing.
Oh, she loves you, David.
She's amazing.
I watched her grow up.
Yeah. And she's
right?
So, you know, it's just everything about her is beautiful. It's so wonderful to be around her because you feel this energy, this warmth, this I really care about you and you care about her.
Aww.
I know it's all encompassing. And it's just... And you don't, let's face it, you don't feel that with everybody.
I think it's really lovely. I think that I like, you know, that you're that way. I think that my readers are a lot that way. You know what the signs are like. It's really very, everybody's really warm. Sometimes I've noticed I got an email today from somebody who said that she was really ill. A lot of people read when they're ill, which is kind of touching. People give them books when they're in the hospital.
Right.
And more I just get more, or maybe I'm just noticing it more. And that's really touching. A lot of people, you know, feeling that a book helped them, took them away from their troubles. Like you said, you get absorbed. That's a really nice thing. You know, because some people suffer so. I mean, there's
It's
heartbreaking.
I was very sick on New Year's Eve. I don't know what I had, but I couldn't even function. And I was reading one book, and this book got me through that sickness.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean.
It got me through it because I wanted to read. I wanted to see what was going to happen next, and I was feeling bad at the same time, and yet I still wanted to know what happened next. That says a lot for the author.
I had that on a plane because the only thing I don't like about book tours, I'm not a great flyer. Like I'm nervous. I admit I don't want to die. I can't believe like we're hurling through the air and there's nothing underneath us, and how are we staying up? And anyway,
and you're so important. I mean, nothing can happen to you.
Nothing can happen to me.
That's right.
Every mother feels that way. I mean, every mother. You know, I'm like, my God, my mother. If anything happened to me, my mother, I couldn't even, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I find that I read almost as soon as I'm in that seat, I don't even, you know, everyone's getting on. I sit right down and I start reading. And it really helps me fly because I just get immersed in the book. And I'm in a completely different place. If I don't look out the window, I'll be all right. And it's only because of books.
Mm.
I mean, it's a bad analogy, but, you know, knock wood, I'm not sick right now. So, but books are really amazing when you think about it. You know, it's, what, for like $15, $18, $20, you have this great, you know, way to nurture yourself and entertain yourself and heal yourself. It's really kind of, right? Mm. I mean, that's amazing.
I've read every one of your fiction books and even your nonfiction ones too, and I have not read one I didn't like yet. There has not been one.
That's very nice of you.
And people are thinking, well, you're just saying that because you're a friend. And that's absolutely the truth. I have not, and I would tell you if I didn't like one of them. I would tell you.
No, I know you would.
And I.
Well, we both know Joe. I mean, you know, Dave Jack, who unfortunately has passed away, our good friend and bookseller, but, you know, he always loved the Vendetta defense.
Yeah.
But I knew, you know, if he didn't like one book as much, I mean, I knew that was his favorite book. He told people that was his favorite book. You know,
it made me laugh. I just remember laughing when I read that book. There's so many funny moments.
That was fun to write. Well, you know, one night, one of the times he was saying, oh, this is, you know, he mentioned the Vendetta defense. I said, Joe, like, did you like any of the other ones? Or he laughed.
Yeah, he was picky. Yeah, he liked what he liked.
Picky. Picky.
But I say that without even, I'll tell anybody that I loved everyone, and I have. There hasn't been one I haven't liked.
Well, I really, it sounds silly, but I have to love it to let it go. I have to go, I love this. That's why it's hard to say in front of.
So wouldn't you know if it was bad? Wouldn't you know if it wasn't working?
Yes, I would.
I mean, wouldn't you say this is crap?
Well, I would say, well, sometimes when I'm writing, I mean, I have a great fear that it won't work. That, you know, because especially with the, I don't want to say murder mystery, it sounds so cheesy, but the bottom line is if there's a murder and somebody has to solve it, which seems to be the case in almost everything I write, because I think it's interesting, I think actually it's fascinating, that it has to be all the things, it has to play fair with the reader, the reader has to be able to, because these are books that people can play along with to a certain extent. And I do when I read other people's books like that. And also, since I don't know how the book's going to end, I'm actually doing it while I'm writing it. And so you have to, sometimes I go, oh, this is, if I start to feel like this is boring, that's what happened with Don't Go in the first draft. In the middle of it, I was like, you know what? This is a little boring. You don't need this. You can take out this whole section. And I did.
So you've learned over the years what needs to go if it goes. I mean, you have a knack for that.
Like, yes, I've learned that if you are bored as a writer, because you go over the book so many times, and also when you're writing it, like, I mean, I can rework a paragraph. I enjoy it. I actually love it. But I will rework a paragraph for like 3 hours.
Hmm.
You know, that sounds kind of crazy. But let me tell you, it's going to be an awesome paragraph when I'm done. And you have to enjoy going, this verb is not exactly what you mean. This adverb, all adverbs suck. Take it out. And then things like, do you really even need this paragraph at all? What does it say new that you didn't say in the paragraph before? Because you don't need to repeat yourself. And I actually think a lot of books make that mistake. And I try not to make that mistake. But so anyway, what I'm trying to say is it's a very long and time-consuming process, and you have to really monitor your own reactions to your own work. So if you had to go, my thoughts are straying, the reader's thoughts are going to stray, take it out. What is it? Elmore Leonard has that great quote. He takes out, he leaves out the parts that people skip.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that a great expression? Like,
oh, absolutely.
And I have that in the back of my mind. Well, I want to skip this because don't you read sometimes and you skip a lot of pages? I do that all the time.
Really?
I do. With some books, because I go, dude, you told me this. I care enough about this to see what happened to this character, but I didn't need all this stuff. You don't need to. Anyway, I like fast-paced books. There's books from like Patterson, you're never going to be skipping anything. In fact, sometimes if I'm not reading carefully with Patterson, I'll go, that guy died?
Yeah, exactly.
I just start going, have you ever done that where you're like, I have to go back a couple pages. Damn, it was one sentence and I missed it. Mm. Like, that happens.
I always get this feeling with James Patterson, I'd love to know what's in his brain. Gosh.
The things that go
through his mind, I can't even imagine what they are.
I know, and they go through fast.
But I mean, with your books, another point with your books is all. I guess there's 20 fiction ones now. I've lost count too. It's over 20.
It's like 22, I think.
But no one of them reminds me of the other one. They all stand on their own, and that's unusual.
Aww.
Because they say some authors. Well, they change the character names, and it's basically the same plot over and over again. And I've heard people say that about authors, certain authors. I won't name them right here, so I don't want to embarrass anybody. But, but your books are never like that. I always feel like it's brand new.
I really appreciate that. Well, that's how it feels to me. That's why it's really...
But that's hard to do, though. That is extremely hard to do.
I don't know. I think you just kind of live your life and you go, what's interesting now? Mm. And be open to the weird things like bunion surgery. Go... Wow, because if you're religious, you go, well, this gets sent to you for a reason. Like, what is the reason? I always sort of look, what is the lesson I can learn from the things that are happening around me? And you just keep learning all these lessons, and you just kind of can make it into a story, and in a way, it's...
Well, you make it sound easy, but it isn't easy. Let's face it, writing is not... Could you ever say writing was easy?
No, that's why it takes... all day to write 2,000 words. That's why it will take from about 8 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night. For just 2,000 words. Sometimes I go, Lisa, Jesus, God, just put something down.
Exactly. There you go, yelling at yourself.
I know, that's not going to be profane about it.
Do you think you're too hard on yourself sometimes?
Yes, I think a lot of people are. I think you're too hard on yourself. I think anybody worth knowing is too hard on themselves. Hmm. Is that terrible to say?
No, it's probably true.
I think it is. I think I know some people who aren't hard on themselves, and I feel as if they could be more humble. I think it's important to understand, to have some grace, to understand how lucky you are, whatever gifts you have, whatever talents you have. You know, that in your case, you can read and apprehend a book so well, you can compare it, that you can interview people and sort of get to the point of the books or each person's appeal, and these are all talents, and I love my brother, but my brother has never read an entire book.
Except yours.
He's never read a book. He's never read a book. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Never read a book?
He's never read a book.
Wow.
He might have read part of the South Beach Diet.
There you go. Well, that's a book.
I don't know, recipes, books, I don't know. But
what would it take to get him to read a book, I wonder?
Well, evidently not his sister writing one.
Exactly. Oh, come on, he must have read. He probably has secretly read one of your books.
Okay, the next time, the next book we have an interview on, we should just take a second and call him. And I will totally cold call him. I won't even, we'll get him on the phone. I'll patch him right in. I'll go, Frank, I have this question. Did you ever read any of my books? And what is the last book you read? And he will tell you. Because some people, I don't know if men... I don't know.
Some men have told me, and this is hard to believe, that it's too much work to read.
I've heard people say that. And, you know, my brother thinks that.
And I think to myself, wait a minute, reading is enjoyable. You don't see the enjoyment in reading? It's work to you?
But see, that's like a lot of what I'm saying about people's skills. You know, some people, they have ants in the pants. They can't even sit long enough to read a book.
But I mean, I got totally lost in Don't Go. I mean, I got totally to the point where I was like, I have to keep going. And I'm up till 2 or 3 in the morning, and I'm not kidding about this. I was up that late, just enjoying the book.
Well, you know, but here's a funny thing. I was on the plane, and of course, I'm reading away. First of all, I love it, but also so I'm not scared. And there was a guy in the window seat, and he wasn't reading anything, and he wasn't doing anything, and he wasn't asleep. He just sat there with his hands in his lap, and he stared straight at the seat back in front of him.
I can't do that.
It was a 3-hour flight.
Wow.
I was like, now I thought, do you have that? I don't have that many deep thoughts. Like, I just couldn't do that. But, everybody's different is what I'm trying to say.
And that's another thing about you that I feel a connection with. Your connection, you always mention Nancy Drew a lot. Because I read Nancy Drew. I read every Nancy Drew book there was.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's so cool. I read almost all of them.
When I was driving in the car with my dad, I used to imagine I was Nancy Drew and, like, investigating people. And it was fun. I mean, it was fun. It was fun to fantasize about that.
It is fun. It's kind of empowering. That's what I liked about her as a character. Like I said, she was so, you know, ordinary. She wasn't like a superhero. She just was a normal person.
And she never got older.
Didn't
have any gray hairs.
She's blonde. What's better than that? Nothing.
She had a perfect life and a perfect boyfriend and a perfect father.
Perfect car.
And perfect friends.
Perfect girlfriend. Perfect. Right.
Even if they got mad at her, they next day they'd love her again, just like that. I mean,
that's right. They never.
And then that's the point. That's why I loved reading her books, because they always it was you were getting away from your life into a perfect life, and that.
Yes.
Here's this perfect life.
And you've got a problem to solve too, like this little problem. Like she's got to figure this out. And
who is that mysterious man around the corner there? Why is he acting that way?
Lark's Berlin, or the Hidden Staircase, or the...
Exactly. I mean, I loved them. I used to go to the store waiting. I would go to the back of the store and wait for the next one to come out. I couldn't wait. And God, when I was so happy when there was a new one out.
I'm just so mad, because I used to get them at the library, and I just remember... And I basically had, like, bought some, and my mother threw them away.
Oh.
I know. I had the blue, like, that soft blue covers that was, like, thatching or hatching or whatever it's called. Oh my God.
Yes, right.
I have one of those. I bought one on eBay.
Oh,
and
really?
One of these days, my treat to myself is going to be to buy some, like, the real original Nancy Drews and collect them. Because I do have a lot of first edition books. Like, I like to collect books. I want to go to bookstores. On tour, I, like, buy, like, a lot of their signed books.
But that's got to be a good feeling to know. I mean, you've made a success out of yourself. You can pretty much, whatever you want, you can pretty much have.
Well,
to a certain extent.
But I can tell you, I buy a lot of books and I deduct them.
Yeah. But I mean, you've been as successful that you can buy things that you want. And that's got to feel good. That's always something that.
Yes, that's true. I also take care of, you know, like, I mean, I have a lot of obligations, but.
Yes, you do.
I think my house is nice. I've put a lot of money into my house. But basically, I don't live crazy, and I never take vacation.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, maybe I'd have a little adventure.
Yes.
And then I'd find the Lost Cove and the little, like, mystery of the...
You make a joke about this. Just think, if you went on vacation, something could happen. You could put it in your book.
Well, that's what happened. I've read a lot of books. I can't think of one right now where the character. It's a lot of thrillers where the characters usually have to get shot. Nelson DeMille did it.
Yeah.
I think of Plum Island. I love Nelson DeMille. One of his books, John Corey had gotten shot, and he went somewhere. You know, they go somewhere to recover. Spencer's done it too. Robert Parker's done it too. Spencer went somewhere to recover, and then lo and behold, he stumbles onto something, and then he's back in the saddle.
Right, exactly. But look how much fun he makes it, though. He makes it so much fun.
I know. Look, these are the pros. I mean, I love Nelson DeMille. I think he's great. I love The Lion's Game. And I like the sequel too, The Panther.
Oh yeah, they're just wonderful.
Yeah, he's great.
or one, the people are at home are thinking, oh, is the interview over? Or are they talking to us? We can't tell.
Well, that's
what are they doing? They're acting like they know each other.
Well, that's the best kind of interview because we're just people talking about books.
That's right. Well, we
people
love books.
Have conversations like
I'll tell you what book you should read. It's a book called Reconstructing Amelia. I don't know if you've read it yet, but it's fantastic.
No, who was the author?
Kimberly. Oh gosh, now I forgot her last name. Isn't that terrible? Is it McVeigh or something like that? I can't remember her last name.
I'll look it up.
You'll find it. It's not only phenomenal. It's just unforgettable too. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since even while we're talking now. I'm thinking about it. It's a haunting. It's a very haunting book.
All right. Well, I will do that. I actually have a flight on Thursday. I'll go buy it before the flight.
Basically, it's about a woman who gets a call that her daughter has been suspended from school and she needs to get over there right away. And she goes over to this private school and her daughter's dead.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
God, I don't know if I can read it. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it's so good, though. Oh, my God. It's
all right, don't talk to me about it anymore because now I'm bumming me out.
But anyway, the book, again, is called Don't Go by Lisa Scottolini. It's in all your bookstores. It's from St. Martin's Press. Excuse me.
Yay.
And you have to read it. You really do. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.